in, just an hour ago, Palestinian resistance is still able to launch rockets into Tel Aviv. We have seen the internal crisis of Israel itself, where they're seeing, you know, demonstrations. Of course, it's settler on settler violence is what I call it. But as you can see, that they're against their own presidency right now. It's at a internal crisis and an external crisis. And these are the types of crises that basically highlight the end of whatever state you want to examine throughout history. This has been kind of the common theme that we see with anything here.
All right, thanks a lot, gentlemen. Zafar Bangosh, director of the Institute of Contemporary Islamic Thought, joining us from Toronto. And thanks to political commentator Shabi Rizvi, joining us from Chicago. And a special thanks to you for staying with us on tonight's Spotlight.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَإِذْ قَالَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ رَبِّ أَرِنِي كَيْفَ تُحْيِي الْمَوْتَى قَالَ أَوَلَمْ تُؤْمِنْ قَالَ بَلَى وَلَكِنْ لِيَطْمَئِنَّ قَلْبِي قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. And when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take four of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by a front, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Six days into U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza, a new report reveals at least two mothers are killed every hour in the besieged Gaza Strip. The U.N. says thousands of Palestinians are detained by Israeli forces in Gaza and they face humiliation and torture. Israeli occupation forces launched fresh raids on several areas of the occupied West Bank, abducting several Palestinians there. ...106 days into Israeli war on the Gaza Strip, and the regime continues with its carpet bombing campaign across the besieged Palestinian territory. Overall death toll from regime's war has passed 24,800, and more than 62,000 people have been wounded, and thousands are still missing and presumed buried under rubble. Israel continues pounding residential buildings and refugee camps in areas it had said would be safe. Hospitals are also overwhelmed throughout the besieged enclave, with people literally waiting on floors for medical treatment. Deadly raids are being conducted while the coastal territory is under a near total communications blackout imposed by the regime in Tel Aviv. As the U.S. managed Israeli genocide in Gaza continues, new UN figures indicate women are among the main victims of the regime's deadly onslaught on Gaza. According to UN Entity for Gender Equality and Empowerment of Women, also known as UN Women, out of nearly 25,000 people killed in Gaza, some 70% make up women and children. UN Women says that two mothers are killed every single hour by the Israeli regime's bombing and shelling campaign. Agency says of nearly 2 million internally displaced people in Gaza, half of them are women and girls. UN Women are also estimate that at least 3,000 women who may have become widows or heads of households are in urgent need of protection and food assistance. Figures by the agency come as nothing has been done to address the crisis concerning women in Gaza. According to the figures, only 0.90% of UN funding that has been directed to national or local women's organizations. Joining us now from Nairobi is Mr. Booker Ngisa, member of the Kenyan Palestine Solidarity Movement. Hello, sir. You can start anywhere you like with the atrocities being 106 days committed against the Gazans there, or the plight of women in Gaza, and this latest report saying that they're really bearing the brunt of the onslaught and the genocidal campaign there.
Thank you very much. And our solidarity still goes to the heroic people of Palestine. And the African people share a lot in their pain, their sacrifices, as they confront the genocidal Zionist regime that continue to indiscriminately bomb innocent children, unarmed women and men in the name of, you know, what they are calling their right to self-defense against the, you know, unarmed population. The humanitarian crisis in Gaza, you know, has reached already at its fever pitch, with children suffering from malnutrition, and the Israeli regime is still determined to block, you know, any kind of support that may reach the children of Gaza in time. That is how determined that they are to suffocate the Gaza children and women, you know, with anger, with to try and make them to subdue them into accepting their genocidal, you know, attempts, and even trying to see that they broke, they want to break their will. But we have seen that these events that is happening in Gaza has continued to happen. In fact, our analysis is that it is better now because the world can see what the Israeli regime is determined to do. And even though they have not achieved any what we are calling military or strategic military gains since they start to bomb and even their onslaught on Gaza, running over the Gaza population and buildings, they haven't received any of their military targets. But they continue relentlessly to bomb innocent people in Gaza. And they are geared towards, you know, unrolling any other statehood that can be of help to the Palestinian people. And I think the move by the Palestinian people to resist this occupation confirms, like in history, that the only option left for our Palestinian brothers and sisters, even with the overwhelming solidarity across the world, particularly Africa, Europe, and America, is to resist this occupation. Many years have passed when the Israel regime, you know, has continued to detain Palestinian children in their prisons without much hygienic condition, even food. They have continued to torture the Palestinian brothers and sisters in their prisons. But at least for this time, the world can see, even the United Nations has continued to observe, that the illegal detention of the Palestinian people.
Right. And let me get this, we don't have much time. I want to get the second question out to you. It's important for me. When you hear the UN say that a mother is killed, two mothers are killed every hour in the besieged Gaza Strip, when you hear that, what crosses your mind? Do you think this is accidental consequence of this war, what they call collateral damage, or do you think this is a deliberate campaign? And please explain why.
First of all, the killing of the innocent people, including the women, that the numbers continue to rise, is not an accident. In fact, it is a deliberate attempt by the Israeli army to make sure that they try to annihilate the Gaza population. And even though they are saying that this could be, you know, what they are calling unprecedented, But for us, we see when you continue to bomb hostels that houses women, you know, and maternity wing, when you continue, for example, to bomb civilian places where women are the majority of those residents, then you cannot say that these are actually things that are not deliberately done to actually liquidate the Palestinian population. We have seen even in camps where previously was declared that those camps were actually secure for women and children, Palestinian women and children, but the Zionist regime continued to bomb these places. So it is incredible that even though they continue to defend themselves, that they have the right of self-defense, but they continue to murder innocent Palestinian population, that the only reason that these Palestinian people have to stand for their rights and the right to statehood, the right to protect their children, the right to protect their motherland. So we can never, ever think that this genocide that is happening in the Palestinian territory, occupied territory, that it is something that is not planned, premeditated, and executed by the Zionist regime of Israel. We know for a fact that the rhetoric from the leaders, the rhetoric from the Zionist leaders continue to reverberate across the globe, and they are talking about the intention, to not just bomb the civilians, but they're talking about the intention to even deny the basic commodities like healthcare, like food, like water, to reach the people of Gaza. The genocide that is underway, it is premeditated, it is being executed consciously by the Zionist regime.
Thank you for joining us, Mr. Booker. In Gaza, two mothers killed every single hour, over nearly 11,000 children so far in so-called self-defense. It's just a crazy position that the regime takes to try to justify what is doing in Gaza. Booker Ngessa, thank you for joining us from Nairobi there, a member at the Palestine Solidarity Movement of Kenya. Meanwhile, the United Nations says Israel is detaining thousands of Palestinians in Gaza since early October when the regime launched its deadly onslaught on the besieged enclave.
During my time here, I managed to meet a number of released detainees. These are men who were detained by the Israeli security forces in unknown locations for between 30 to 55 days. They described being beaten, humiliated, subjected to ill treatment, and to what may amount to torture. They reported being blindfolded for long periods, some of them for several consecutive days.
I don't see any, so let's go to the platform.
Sungay said Palestinians are detained in horrific conditions. He said he personally heard accounts of released detainees who said they were beaten and humiliated. Commissioner also urged the release of those held without charge and called for a transparent probe into all instances of torture by the Israeli regime. Multiple released Palestinian detainees said they were transferred in trucks to open-air prisons where they suffered different forms of maltreatment.
They took me to the truck, and the truck was crowded with detainees. They practiced the worst types of torture on us. It was a rainy night, so they took us to a northern area and put us on the asphalt. It was raining hard and it was cold. We stayed in the rain for more than an hour, and they beat us while we were tied up.
Freed prisoners also said they were threatened to be shot and forced to insult Palestinian groups and political figures. Such accounts are backed by footage released by Israeli troops on social media, which shows mistreatment of prisoners. Videos often show blindfolded Palestinians, among them many women and children. South African politician and youth activist Mohammed Khalid Sayed spoke to us earlier about Israeli genocide in Gaza. He tried to explain why he thinks the regime is imposing an all-out communications blackout.
Because this is a genocide, the pictures are here, the death toll speaks to it. But even within that context, the people of Gaza and the resistance and Hamas in particular have put up a brave fight and they continue to resist. And we want to commend them for that. without Iran, this particular axis giving support to the suffering people of Gaza and to the resistance in Gaza will not be possible. The aim of the Israeli regime in carrying out this particular blackout is so that they can suppress the information coming out of Gaza, so that their crimes, their atrocities, their genocide cannot be sent out to the rest of the world. But still, the information is at our disposal. So that's their objective. But also, you know, crazy regimes like the Israeli regime, especially the one led by Benjamin Netanyahu, does not always even think rationally, even in terms of their own interests. Yes, the interest is to obliterate, to flatten Gaza, to kill each and every Palestinian living in Gaza. But the blocking out of communication, they see it as part of that, but they do not understand that this is simply backfiring. It's making the Israeli regime yet again look like a regime that wants to close out each and every communication.
And now the United Nations Office for Humanitarian Affairs says Israel's blocking most of the much-needed humanitarian aid into northern Gaza. Bodies Branch in Palestine says Israel's denied almost 70% of aid that was about to be delivered to northern Gaza during the first half of January. Group added Israeli military also blocked 95% of shipments of fuel and medicine in the same period. The UN Special Rapporteur said this week that Israel is destroying Gaza's food system and using food as a weapon against the Palestinian people. Meanwhile, Israel continues to target hospitals in Gaza, destroying few healthcare facilities that are still open. The Palestinian Red Cross said regimes attacked Al-Amal Hospital in the southern city of Khan Yunis with drones, adding displaced people were injured as a result of drones targeting citizens there with gunfire. The World Health Organization says most of the coastal sliver's 36 hospitals have stopped working. The organization says Israel's attacked hospitals and other vital medical infrastructure nearly 600 times. Israeli forces have carried out fresh raids of several areas of the occupied West Bank, including a refugee camp near Al-Quds. Regime troops clashed with Palestinians during a raid on the Shufat camp. They abducted several Palestinians as well. There's another Israeli raid on the Balata refugee camp near Nablus. The military wing of Islamic Jihad resistance movement says its fighters from Nablus confronted Israeli forces at the camp. Another Palestinian armed faction named Al-Aqsa Marchers Brigades also reported confrontation with regime troops there. Since October 7th, Israel's intensified its raids and arrests throughout much of the occupied territory. Regime forces withdrew from refugee camp in the city of Tulkarm on Friday after raiding several locations there for almost 2 days. Raid killing at least 8 Palestinians and left a trail of destruction.
The Israeli army comes to kill, not to detain or arrest wanted people. No, they come to kill young people, old people, animals, or inanimates. If they see a shadow of a cat, they'll kill it.
At the beginning of the raid, they entered this house and they stayed in it. There was a window there and they were observing through it. More soldiers joined them and they raided the area and destroyed houses.
Dozens of Palestinians have been abducted during a 2-day raid on Tulkarm refugee camp. According to an advocacy group, Palestinian Prisoners Club, some of those detained were severely beaten by Israeli forces. Since October 7th, Israel's military and settlers have carried out incursions into different areas of the West Bank almost on a daily basis, killing and arresting Palestinians during these raids. Thanks for tuning in, and bye-bye for now.
The whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Supplication on Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite. Words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all. From the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord and Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee, and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. O the Most Merciful.
In the limelight.
Since October 7th, the Zionist settlers who in recent years have received hundreds of millions of dollars in state funding have carried out more than 200 attacks on Palestinians. And that's according to Beth Salem and Yeshtin, two human rights groups documenting attacks in the West Bank. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the second part, please. Middle East Eye wrote, many Palestinians in the West Bank have shut their businesses in protest against the Zionist regime's relentless bombing of Gaza, where almost all of the enclave's 2.3 million inhabitants have been displaced after 3 months of war by the Zionist regime. In recent weeks, the Zionist regime has come under mounting pressure from the global south to end its assault on Gaza, where the death toll has passed 23,000, with about 70% of those killed identified as women and children. But with the Zionist regime repeatedly cracking down on acts of solidarity with Gaza, public displays of protest have been sparse. The atmosphere at Balata Refugee quickly changed within the space of a few minutes, with armed young men thronging one of the main streets, warning residents that the Zionist regime was planning another raid. Dozens of people rushed to block the main entrance of the camp so as to slow down the entry of Zionist troops using rocks, boulders, pieces of sheet metal, and whatever else they could gather. In this Israeli regime raid, at least one Palestinian man was killed. Unlike urban areas of the West Bank, where Palestinians have a strength in numbers to resist Zionist settlers' attacks, remote villages are often at the mercy of rampaging Zionist settlers supported by the Zionist regime army. Nowhere is this more evident than in Al-Khalil Hills, in the village of Tuwani in Area C, land that feels under full Zionist military and civil control. The villagers are not allowed to possess weapons. According to the United Nations, in 2023, there were, on average, 3 incidents of Zionist settler violence per day in the West Bank. Since October 7th, that has more than doubled to 7 per day on average, more than a third of them involving firearms. Patriarch Hafez Horeini told Middle East Eye how armed Zionist settlers had imposed a reign of terror and were seizing livestock, wrecking water tanks, smashing solar panels, bulldozing outbuildings and destroying the olive groves. Horeini said they bulldozed all our land with olives and terraces, destroying everything. We dare not go even 20 meters to our land. He said the Zionist settlers are taking advantage of the war in Gaza to seize the land. Now they rule everything around here. They block the entrances to our villages. They steal our possessions. They smash our solar panels and bulldoze agricultural buildings, trees, and stone walls. His son Mohammed shows everyone that he can the video footage of settlers in military fatigues invading his property. When asked whether they were serving troops with the Zionist regime army, he said he wasn't sure. He said, "We have no right to apply the law. We are not safe. Our lives are in real danger." He said the situation was worse in the most isolated villages where people have already started to flee the Zionist settler violence. The Zionist settlers are clear about their intentions. They tell the Palestinian villagers, go to the city, go to Yatta, a city south of Al-Khalil. In 24 hours, if we find you here, we will kill you. Middle East Eye previously reported that the Zionist settlers distributed menacing leaflets and left bloody dolls at schools, warning Palestinians to either leave or be killed. Residents of one West Bank village said they were sent warning letters that read, "You wanted war, wait for the great Nakba." According to information from the West Bank Protection Consortium and the Israeli human rights group Yeshdin, about 545 Palestinians have been forcibly displaced from at least 13 communities in Area C since October 7th. Palestinian man told Middle East Eye the Israeli troops have expropriated a lot of our land. Upon reaching the village of Halawa, a few kilometers from Al-Khalil, several Bedouin Palestinian families said their plight was being ignored as armed Zionist settlers and troops erased entire Bedouin villages in the West Bank. Another Palestinian man said, "As you can see, there are no roads, no more pastures for our animals. This area is now used by military for exercises. The Israeli troops come, they demolish the tents and buildings we put up, so we have now dug holes in the earth, making caves out of them, and we live here. That way, at least, they can't demolish our homes." The Zionist violence has forced entire communities from their land, with nearly 1,000 Palestinians from at least 15 herding communities having to flee their homes. A team of doctors bringing medicine to the most rural areas lamented the dire situation and the Zionist regime endorsements of the settler groups. A doctor told Middle East Eye, "We are moving around today because it is Shabbat. The situation should be calmer because the Israelis are busy praying. Often Zionist settlers shoot at us to prevent us from bringing aid and medical care to the villages. Sometimes the troops do that too. They close the roads with mobile checkpoints, so we must turn back, leaving many families without medical care." Data from Yeshdin has shown that between 2005 and 2022, at least 93% of all investigations into ideologically motivated crime in the West Bank were closed without an indictment. Middle East Eye reached out to the Israeli army for comment but did not receive a response by the time of this article.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Everyone is hungry. The United Nations says Israel is destroying Gaza's food system and weaponizing food. Hello and welcome back to Gaza Under Attack. I'm Said Puruza in London. Before anything, here's a recap of some of the latest developments of the past 24 hours. Dozens of Palestinians have been killed or wounded in Israeli airstrikes on several areas in the Gaza Strip over the past 24 hours, as the occupation regime presses ahead with its genocidal war against the besieged territory. The UN says Gazans now make up 80% of all people facing famine or catastrophic hunger worldwide, marking an unprecedented humanitarian crisis in the blockaded territory. At the World Economic Forum in Davos, the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has once again appealed for an immediate ceasefire in the Gaza Strip. Also at the forum, the Palestinian Authority Minister of Social Development, who has called for pressure on Israeli authorities to open all of the crossings into the Gaza Strip to allow in relief and medical supplies. Despite the impending famine and the carnage in Gaza, Germany's government is considering the delivery of tank ammunition to the Israeli regime with U.S. approval. Since the start of the aggression, the Israeli regime has killed at least 24,500 Palestinians, mostly women and children, and injured at least 61,500 more. On this program, Carol Swords, a humanitarian campaigner. Carol is a longtime pro-Palestinian advocate and even prouder great-grandmother. Via Skype from Leeds, author and imam of Bab el-Ilm, Sheikh Jafar Ladak. Thank you very much to both of you for being here. I'll start with you, Carol, and I'm going to start with a quote from the American political scientist Robert Pape, who said of the Gaza massacre in the following words: Gaza, quote, is one of the most intense civilian punishment campaigns in history. It now sits comfortably in the top quartile of the most devastating bombing campaigns ever. Speak to that.
I wouldn't say they're sitting comfortably at all, would you? How can we go back a little bit? Germany be sending tanks. They should be sending aid. They should be 80% of the world's population starving. Why aren't they sending food? Why are they sending weapons with the US approval? It's unbelievable. I can't understand why a country called Germany, who should be reeling what's going on, reeling, and the people of Germany must be like the people of the UK, having a government that's working against what the people really want, to send weaponry to kill more Palestinians, 25,000 people dead in Gaza already. How that's not, and 60,000 injured, not counting the millions displaced. Where I live, there's six little schools, maybe 300 kids in each school. That, put that into some kind of perspective. That's every kid in every class, in every school, dead, gone.
Well,
no families, that's it. Not including their parents, their cousins, their aunts, their uncles, their grandparents, their dogs, their cats. Gone. Forever. Never to come back. And they're still wanting to send weapons to kill more. It beggars belief that even the most stupid person in the world wouldn't even believe something like that could be happening.
And the Germans bought a missile system from the Israeli regime just last year to the tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars. Sheikh Ladak, some of the most influential voices in the global stage are together at Davos, Switzerland, as we speak. Other than the lack of political will to stop the bloodbath in Gaza, what else do you think is preventing those leaders to act on what their publics have been demanding since day one, which is an end to the hostilities?
In a word, I would call it cowardice. I think you can say that there's a lack of political will. I also think you can say that there is political cowardice at this moment. Very, very few nations have really stood up to support the Palestinians. Like we just heard from Carol, from one perspective, you've got nations still supplying Israel with weapons during a time in which 100 children a day are being murdered from the skies with those weapons. On the other side, you have, for example, Yemen, who is the poorest nation in Arabia, across the Middle East, West Asia, and has been bombarded for 10 years or so, gone through its own famine, and yet it wants to be able to do whatever it can. There was a famous statement that came out from the deputy foreign minister of Yemen this week when the United States of America started attacking it with its weapons, and it said, we're genuinely pleased that we are now being bombed, because all of this last 100 days, we've been calling to stop the bombardment, but we couldn't tell you what we felt like with this bombardment, and now we're receiving it. So at least we have some equity between ourselves and our Palestinian brethren. So you can see that the spectrum that there is available in the international scene, there's war criminals, there's maniacal nations, and there's others that are willing to be bombarded themselves just to be able to draw the eye of the specter on them and away from Gaza just for a little period of time, if possible. In between that sits the rest of the world, those that are nations that are doing very, very little. So I really feel that there's political cowardice on the face of the majority of the world when you're seeing what we're seeing unfolding.
We just heard Carol mention Germany there, and as I mentioned at the top of the show, what really motivates Germany to do this, you know, instead of calling for a ceasefire, for an end to the bloodshed, to the carnage, they're proceeding with providing the Israeli regime with more weaponry, feeding weapons into the Israeli war machine against the Palestinian people. Some people have called it Holocaust guilt. What do you make of that?
Germany is famous not just only for the Holocaust between 1935 and 1939 and 1945, but also the first Holocaust of the 20th century when it massacred thousands in Namibia. It seems that either we can say that there is sort of this guilt, or worse, we can actually say that there's something fundamentally wrong with a nation that consistently, over the span of 120 years, has been party to three genocides. And I feel that we should maybe stop giving Germany this sort of free pass by calling it this sort of guilt. If you truly had guilt, then you wouldn't be committing the same crimes over and over again, especially now in real time, when there are things like a case at the ICJ putting forth a ton of evidence of the genocide that then you are going to be party to. I'm not sure we can call it guilt. Mm-hmm. I actually think that there's something fundamentally wrong with their political makeup and the way in which they are idealizing this particular event.
You make a great point, Sheikh. We're going to stay with the World Economic Forum a bit longer. One of the speakers at the event was Jordanian Prime Minister Bashar al-Hassani, who addressed the South African government's case against the Israeli regime at the International Court of Justice, saying his country would participate if called upon. Let's listen in.
We cannot today, after the lapse of 101 days from this military operation and aggression that Israel has embarked upon in Gaza, we cannot today at all subscribe, as we have from day one, that this is an aggression operation that operates in the context of self-defense, as we all understand it. Self-defense in customary international law is a response to an action that is instant, overwhelming, that needs no choice or means or a moment for deliberation, and that has to be always conditioned by the two requisites of proportionality and necessity. And clearly, in the context of this, of those principles of customary international law that are entrenched in the Caroline case, all of this criteria is not something that's met by the Israeli reaction that has crossed all those boundaries, and that have regrettably probably delved into elements of definitions contained in the Geneva Conventions about war crimes, about crimes against humanity, and even arguably in many instances in cases if intent is shown in the context of actions that could lead to an act of genocide.
I'll put my next question to Carol. And Carol, you heard what the Jordanian official had to say, the prime minister there. Jordan being the country that has seen the impact of displaced Palestinians, there's a sizable population of Palestinian refugees there. How important is it for regional countries to help push the case at the ICJ against Israel in solidarity with Palestinians?
Well, why haven't they done it? Why is it 105 days? why wait so long? Mm-hmm. You know, we've got all, and I was fortunate, I lived in Jordan and I seen, they're under stress. Not only did they take Palestinians, then they took the Syrians, and now they're taking the Palestinians again. And the people of Jordan are getting angry because there's not enough in the pot for everyone. Mm-hmm. And the other countries need to do their bit, you know. And it's all well and good saying, oh, let's put them here, let's put them there. These are people. This is their home. Palestine is their home. They don't want to leave their home. Yeah. And the ICC, they need to be told it has to stop. We have to rebuild Gaza. We have to take the siege off of Gaza. We have to rebuild Palestine and give Palestinians the right to their homeland. All these little sand bites, this, that, and the other, it's not going to work. People need their homes.
No voluntary evacuation, which is a euphemism Israelis have been using for ethnic cleansing, basically.
Well, let's send them to Africa. Is that the latest one? Why would they want to leave their homes? You know, why have they persevered since 1948? If they had that choice then, they could have went off and made a new life somewhere. Mm-hmm. This is their home. They're not going nowhere. It's where they live. And no matter what the BBC and all these other stations say, like, oh, Israel's got the right to self-defense, Israel's got this, Israel's got that, Israel's not Israel. Israel is Palestine, and people need to recognize that thing, that it's Palestine, and the Palestinians need to be equal. They need to have equal rights, and all this has to stop. And unless the whole community, every community, not only Jordan, not only the help from the poor people of the Yemen, and not only the Lebanese resistance, everybody has to come in. They need to step up. Mm-hmm. And when we've got governments like our own government in Germany who are talking for the people, where the people, you've seen the millions of people on the streets week after week, day after day, they're not listening to us. They can't keep doing this and allowing these poor Palestinians to suffer in the way they are. Mm.
Sheikh Ladak, is the Israeli regime simply thumbing their nose at international institutions at this point? We've all heard what the Israeli prime minister had to say about the genocide case against Tel Aviv, that it's not going to stop them from continuing with this unfolding genocide.
Let me reverse the question, if I may. When has the Israeli regime not thumbed its nose at international institutions or at humanitarian institutions and organizations? If you just go back a second to that question about Jordan and then think about the second question that you've asked, Jordan's military and peacekeeping forces are actually quite significant. Potentially, Jordan can do a lot on the border with Palestine. Its military is some 8.7% of its total GDP. That's not small. It has some 60,000 peacekeeping officers that have been experienced enough to go to places like Angola, Afghanistan, Iraq. So they don't not have experience of how to be able to intervene and give safety to people when needed. So again, we need to ask these fundamental questions like we asked previously. Why are these nations not doing enough? Why are some willing to step up and some unwilling to do anything other than talk at best?
Why do you think that is, Sheikh?
We said earlier it's political cowardice. I do feel that the normalization with Israel has become so rampant amongst many of the Arab and Middle East states that so many of them have been put on the back foot that they don't know how to be able to get out of the pit that they've dug for themselves. So because of this has been an ongoing situation for decades now, that it's now so difficult to stop the Israeli regime, which is why you asked that follow-up question. Are they thumbing their nose? Well, when have they not done that? And when have they received any pushback from any significant Middle Eastern nation? So if you had the experience of being a bully for decades, why would you stop now? What would a case at the ICJ do? What would a meeting at Davos really do? With respect, Israel only understands the language of force, and they've only seen that economic sanctions have done anything to them. At the moment, their international appeal or their their PR campaign is so trodden on. They have been exposed by every camera in the world, and still they continue to commit genocide. Last night, just around Nasser Hospital, around Khan Yunus, carpet bombing around another hospital, cutting off telecommunications. They don't listen to logic. They don't listen to anything. Only force and only an international community is going to be able to stop them. And cowardice and being on the back foot is not going to support the Palestinian cause.
The language of force, the language that any occupier seems to understand. This is Gaza Under Attack with me, Saeed Pourza, where we zero in on news of and around the Israeli atrocities against Palestinians. A genocide in 2024 with the entire world watching it live without any serious efforts to stop it defies logic. Two nations who have intervened include Yemen and South Africa. Earlier, we spoke to London-based barrister, activist, and writer Aisha Khan and asked her if Yemen was breaking any law by targeting vessels in the Red Sea.
Legally, the Americans have absolutely no right to be bombing Yemen. In legal terms, under the UN conventions and resolutions and decisions, and even the Genocide Convention itself, the Rome Treaties, what the legal position actually is that Yemen, as a state, has the duty to, if it sees genocide, to prevent it as it sees fit. So actually, the funny thing, or what we have not seen in the media, is going by the UN's own documents and own judgments and resolutions, Yemen is the only one, by preventing these ships from giving supplies to Israel, the only state acting in accordance with international law. The Yemenis have not killed anyone, have not killed any of their citizens. And we can actually see this in the rhetoric of Joseph Biden and Rishi Sunak. And they're very clear when they speak about why they are taking military action and why it is, and they've said it, is for commercial interest, to keep open commercial shipping lanes and to ensure that commercial ships are not blocked. So they are very clearly saying they are protecting the interests and the private property of the rich and believe that this is a reason to bomb. Obviously, this is not a reason to bomb. It's nothing to do with state security or national security. And at this point, they're just acting as militias for billionaires and for private interests, which is not in their remit at all. And they're acting absolutely illegally.
Aisha urged people from all over the world to write to judges at the ICJ in the South African case against Israel to remind them of the importance of ruling in favor of Palestinian lives and against Tel Aviv's onslaught.
As we are not parties to these proceedings, there is no reason we cannot email the judges to remind them about the evidence, and the evidence, obviously, of children being having their limbs amputated, disabled children, the mass amount of death in Gaza. And this is simply to remind the judges that they are not state actors, they are jurists, and that their primary concern is the law and is basing their judgments on evidence. This is no different to what Israel actually has done, where they took a diplomatic mission to all of these countries in order for their states to put pressure on these judges to make decisions in the state political interest and not on a legal basis. And we will see this in particular with the American judge, who I absolutely doubt will vote for South Africa's case and will be very heavily swayed by Israel based on the fact that she is under pressure, diplomatic and political pressure, from her own government and from Israel. So if Israel can try and pervert the course of justice, there is no reason why normal human beings, me and you, cannot send evidence to these judges to remind them that they are judges and they are not state actors.
The human cost of the statistics detailing the killed and injured can sometimes be lost in the mire of analysis. An Israeli strike on a house in Rafah has taken the lives of three members of a family sheltering inside. The lament of the distraught father is a tragic reminder that the bombardment of Gaza has left no family unscathed.
When the strike first hit,
I woke up screaming, "Massa, Massa," not knowing what had happened. I was unaware of what was going on. I looked around and found that the bombing happened inside my home. Where are my siblings? Where are my children? Thank God, anyway. My daughter has been killed, and my injured brother is in the European hospital, while my second injured daughter is in the Abu Yusuf al-Najjar hospital.
Sheikh Ladak, let's dig deeper a little bit, if we can, on the action taken by South Africa and Yemen in solidarity with Palestinians. What do you make of what they have done? And as far as the South African genocide case against Israel is concerned, what are your hopes and fears in terms of which way the ruling will go?
Between these two great nations, we can see that many of the bases that need covering in this ongoing fight against Israel is being covered. So from one perspective, you have a legal case, you have a diplomatic side. And then from the perspective of Yemen, we have a military campaign and an economic campaign to be able to stop this genocide that's taking place. If you take a step back and try to see what the world is doing, the world is in many cases putting pressure points on all the different areas that it needs to. It's trying to put pressure at the governmental level. There's a media campaign, especially through social media, to try to raise awareness. People are taking to the streets. So there is so much being done to try to pressurize this entity to try to stop what it's doing. What my fears are that many people will put stock in the ICJ case to such an extent that if they decide not to find Israel guilty of its genocide, then people may lose hope of this sort of diplomatic and legal solution. The reality is that no matter what comes from the ICJ, there is no legal reprimand on Israel. Rather, this is the United Nations top court and not actually a court that can actually do anything in terms of a legal reprimand. Yeah. So what I don't want people to do is to lose hope just in case this side of the angle actually doesn't help. What we can see is that by virtue of Britain and America bombing Yemen, it actually shows that this has caused them to intervene to such an extent where they need to directly now intervene in their support for Israel. Can you imagine how much damage Yemen must be doing to the Israeli economy, to the global forces of evil that are carrying out their maniacal practices and behaviors? Otherwise, you wouldn't see them intervening. Now, you can go further with your analysis. The fact that the global media, the Western media, has to hide the truth about what Yemen is doing and not speak about it in its plain context is another evidence of how important Yemen's role is in this conflict. Let me give you an example. If you turn anywhere on BBC News,
if you can, please.
You will only see that they will say that this is in support of Palestine. They won't say that they gave a condition. You are starving the people of Palestine. There's no medicines going through. You have to be able to open up the borders to allow these things through. Then we will stop our advances on the Strait of Mandan. All of this shows how advanced the Yemeni cause has become.
Okay. Carol Swartz, Sheikh Ladak, thank you both for your contributions. And thank you for spending time with us. We'll be back with the latest news and analysis. Until we meet again, continue to keep Palestine in your hearts. Goodbye for now.
In the limelight.
Over a million Palestinians have fled south to Rafah, on Gaza's border with Egypt, but makeshift tents offer no protection from the cold and the Zionist regime's bombs. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, arriving at Al-Mawasi, a town close to Rafah on Gaza's southern border with Egypt, 37-year-old Rasha Mansour found nothing but sand and an empty place with no tents. Mansour, her husband and their five children left their home in central Gaza's Al-Buraj refugee camp 2 weeks ago. After the Zionist regime ordered its residents to move to the adjacent Deir al-Balah, or to head south to Rafah, which is now home to more than a million displaced Palestinians. With no space available at Deir al-Balah, Mansour told her husband she thought they should travel to Rafah so that we would not be forced to move anywhere again. The war had already hit the family hard. A month in, Mansour told Middle East Eye, the Zionist regime was bombing their camp despite assurances that it was safe. During the second month of the war, I lost my younger brother, Abdurrahman, and my uncle's family. The missiles fell on my uncle's house next to us, and all my relatives in the building were killed. My uncle, his grandchildren, his daughters, and my brother. My mother and father have been in Egypt for several months to treat my father. We are living in the most difficult circumstances without our parents. Soon after, Mansour and her family fled south. I took with me a blanket and enough bedding for the family and some other things. Arriving in Al-Mawasi, the family found an overcrowded seaside wasteland. It was the